Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, April the 5th. And we'll talk this hour about the N-word. I'm not going to say it right here, but it's possible you will hear the N-word this hour in the course of this discussion, so please be advised. The racial slur is considered vile by most Americans, offensive, even obscene, and a number of local governments are acting to try to ban it. The New York City Council last month passed a symbolic moratorium on the use of the word, symbolic because there are no penalties, but it's an effort to discourage the use of the word, especially among young people. And supporters of the moratorium are setting their sights now on the music industry, asking the Recording Academy to not nominate musicians for Grammy Awards if they use the N-word in their lyrics. Many of these efforts received momentum late last year when comedian Michael Richards sparked a national conversation about the use of the N-word when he ranted and raved and called an audience member the N-word when he was performing in the comedy club The Laugh Factory. Richards' use of the N-word may have ended his career, and it also ended any performances by comedians at the Laugh Factory who used the N-word in their acts. The Laugh Factory took the action, believing apparently that the N-word is no laughing matter. So when is it okay and when is it not to use the N-word? And should I be using the N-word right now in a journalistic sense rather than referring to it as the N-word? We'll ask our guest what he thinks. He's written a book on the cultural history of the N-word, its origin, its evolution, the current state of its usage, and we will welcome your thoughts and questions for him. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anywhere. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Jabari Asim. He is deputy editor of the Washington Post Book World. He's also author of the recently published The N-Word, Who Can Say It, Who Shouldn't, and Why. Good morning.
Good morning.
So should I be saying the N-word every time referring to this during this discussion?
I don't think so. I think that journalists are among the groups who can justify using the word in particular cases. But I do think you also at the same time have to defer to the sensibilities of your audience.
Yeah,
I mean, if it's a family newspaper, for example, I do think it's useful occasionally to spell out what the N-word is, but at the same time, to do that very judiciously and not very often.
Yeah, and plus we're talking on the public airwaves.
Yes.
We generally avoid using any profanity on the air.
Right.
So I will continue calling it the N-word. But you mentioned one example you use is like Mark Furman, the L.A. cop of the O.J. Simpson case. If a journalist just says he used racist language in the past, that's not as compelling or descriptive is,
exactly.
As if they actually said what he said.
Exactly. I mean, as a reader, I want to know more. You know, my reaction is, okay, he used a racist epithet. Well, unfortunately, there are thousands of racist epithets. I wanted a little more specific in order to provide me an opportunity to get some insight into his character.
All right. So journalists can use it judiciously to fully explain a situation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. For example, when the three civil rights workers were murdered in Mississippi, Philadelphia, Mississippi, in 1964, some of the journalistic accounts of the murder, as it was uncovered, included use of the N-word. It's collected in a book called Reporting Civil Rights. And I think that choosing to include the N-word and those particular accounts actually enhanced those accounts and gave us a better understanding of the context in which the civil rights workers were murdered.
Yeah. You also think that artists, like writers, comedians, musicians, who use the term with awareness should be able to use it.
Right. I think that, you know, I tend to think that art is separate from everyday speech and that we are really treading on very shaky ground when we venture this notion that we should censor artists in terms of their material. To me, telling an artist that any particular word is forbidden because I find it offensive is sort of, it would be like telling Picasso, don't use blue because, you know, a lot of people don't like blue. They respond negatively to blue. And I think it's the... the rewards do not outweigh the losses when we restrict the repertoire and the palette of artists.
So then you would object to, for instance, the Laugh Factory not inviting comedians who use the N-word in their acts?
Yes, I think that's too blanket a policy. I mean, Lenny Bruce, for example, used the N-word in his act very effectively. He was satirizing racism. Richard Pryor used it very effectively in his act. He was satirizing racism. And I think if you say just wholesale across the board, there's language that you can't use, then we all lose as a result of that.
Yeah. Why do you think it can be effectively used by artists?
Well, I mean, it really depends on the talent of the artist. That's what is at stake here as opposed to our sensibilities. Richard Pryor and Lenny Bruce are good examples. Mark Twain is another. I think he uses the word very effectively. Now, I might write a novel and use the word as well and not entirely successfully. You might read it and say, you know, I couldn't get past this language that you use. Well, that means that I failed in my mission as an artist. And I think that is very dependent. We are at the mercy of the artist in terms of their abilities, but we also have the opportunity to turn them off. If I know that Lenny Bruce, for example, is going to be at the club and I know he uses language that I don't care for, then I have an option not to attend.
Yeah. What do you make of this movement then, though, to encourage the Grammy Awards to not nominate artists, musicians that use this in their lyrics?
Well, I think that's really problematic. I mean, I certainly understand the sentiment behind it, let me say that. But, you know, one of the most successful Grammy winners in history is Stevie Wonder. Stevie Wonder's Inner Visions album swept the Grammys the year it came out. One of the songs is called Living for the City, and it contains the N-word. And if they were to say, okay, no more Grammy nominations for artists who use the N-word in their music, I mean, would we retroactively go back and revoke Stevie Wonder's Grammy for that song? I mean, it becomes very, very complicated.
Yeah, I thought you were, though, critical of the overuse of it, perhaps, in hip-hop music.
Right. And, you know, again, I want to say that I think it's dangerous to generalize about rap music in particular and its use of the N-word. What I say in the book is you have to sort of examine it on a case-by-case basis. I found many instances where I thought the use of the N-word was gratuitous and unnecessary and hindered the message of the artist. On the other hand, I did find instances in which I thought it qualified as acceptable usage.
Yeah. Then besides artists, journalists, who else can use the N-word in your opinion?
I think that it's safely within the province of scholars. For example, when I was researching earlier periods of American history, many of the major historians of those periods, Leon Littwack, Ira Berlin, scholars like that, they quote the N-word with some frequency because it occurred frequently in the areas that they are doing their scholarship on, and they're sharing their information with us as readers. I think I benefited from them choosing to use the word. It gave me a very accurate impression of the setting and context in which the language was used. So I think that in scholarship, again, it's a place where it could be used. Now, I ran into an instance yesterday of a scholar reading from his work in a forum where he was stopped, and they said, look, don't use the N-word, use a euphemism. So I thought, you know, perhaps with the text, as he was working as a scholar, he wanted to report it accurately. I think if I were the scholar, I would edit myself if I were presenting it to an audience, or if, say, I were presenting it on a radio show. I wouldn't quote it directly because of the sensibilities and restrictions involved.
And everybody else should not use the word.
Yes, and you know, this is my view that it doesn't have a place in polite conversation. One of the questions I took on was, is it okay for blacks to use it and whites not to use it? And what I concluded, based on my meditation and contemplation of the issue, is that really doesn't hold. I don't think blacks should use it either in polite speech in the public square.
But what about that? This is a term of endearment.
Well, I think that's pretty simple. I mean, the history of the word really springs from hate. It springs from denunciation, from condemnation. And I think that history clings very tenaciously to the word, so much so that it really is not persuasive to me as a term of endearment. And I think other words work better, such as friend, our brother, our pal, our buddy. I think almost anything works better than a word that has historically been an insult.
We are talking with Jabari Asim. He is deputy editor of the Washington Post Book World. He is also author of the recently published book, The N-Word, Who Can Say It, Who Shouldn't, and Why. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. What questions do you have about this? Do you agree or disagree with what you've heard so far? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. At Issue with Ben Marins comes your way between 4 and 6 this afternoon. After 4, join Ben as his guest for a Middle East update, violence in Iraq, the debate over war funding, the latest developments in the release of those British sailors from Iran. That's coming up during At Issue with Ben Marins after 5 this afternoon. We're talking about the N-word with a guest who wrote a book about the cultural history of the word, its origin, its growth, its current state of use. Is it okay for anyone to use the N-word? Who should say it or can say it? Who shouldn't and why? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We are talking with Jabari Asim, who is also the editor of the Washington Post Book World. And you trace the origin of the word to Thomas Jefferson, Jabari Asim.
Well, somewhat. I mean, I actually say in the book that I don't believe that Thomas Jefferson ever used the word, because he was what we would consider a member of the refined class and would have considered the word crude. What I do is trace the connection of racist language to racist customs, racist laws, etc., and how they work together to perpetuate this idea, at least in Jefferson's time, that blacks were unfit for freedom. And Thomas Jefferson actually codified much of that mythology in a very influential book called Notes on the State of Virginia.
Yeah. And how did the N-word, I don't know, what is the evolution of the N-word then?
Well, I traced it, I mean, the word is older than I traced it back to. I traced it back to its usage in British North America, which was my area of interest. And the first 20 African captives arrived in Jamestown in 1619. And John Rolfe, who kept a diary of the colony's comings and goings, exports and imports, noted their arrival by describing them using the N-word. And I point out this was 1619, and Negro, as a description of Africans, had been in use since the 1550s. So it was, in my view, a deliberate decision to use a pejorative to describe the newcomers.
Yeah, and when did it, for lack of a better phrase, fall out of fashion?
Following the passage of the major civil rights legislation at the end of the 1960s, the word undergoes a very odd swing of fate. It becomes very unfashionable for whites to use the word publicly, whereas just before that, we had Southern senators and Congress persons using the word on the floor of the Senate and on the floor of the House. They were comfortable using it in that context. But after the passage of that civil rights legislation, the climate of the country so changed that it was no longer fashionable. It's about at that time that the word begins to become slowly popular among African Americans.
And why do you think that was?
You know, I really don't know. I think part of it is not just an African-American tendency to turn a blind eye to history, but an American tendency. I mean, we want to quickly put the past behind us, particularly if it's painful. And because we put the past behind us, the pre-civil rights era, then we lost a lot of that attendant history and its meaning. And so we no longer have the context in which we appreciate and understand the use and misuse of words like the N-word.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the phones. Lots of people want to talk with you. Sarah in Lodi is first. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I guess my concern with the use of the N-word in hip-hop and in rap is we're all obviously finding this word offensive enough that we're calling it the N-word and not even using it on air. And I think it normalizes it for youth that did not grow up during the time where it was used in such an incredibly hateful manner. And I don't want to see that normalcy of using that word. And I also think as far as the black community using it for them toward themselves, I think that any time we're very hurt by something, there are times when if we say it about ourselves first, it doesn't hurt so much when someone else calls us that. And I'll take my comments off air, please.
Thanks for calling, Sarah. Jabari Yassin?
I think she's right in pointing out this generational divide in an attitude toward the N-word. And that's where I would suggest that people like the caller and people like me, that as adults we have a responsibility to fill in the gaps of the history to the youth who don't know. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, because in the African-American community, the discussion often centers around this idea where elders and adults say young people wouldn't use the word if they just knew the history. So I thought, why not condense and compile that history and put it in a handy volume? And when youths do make that decision, whether they want to use that word or not, it becomes an informed decision.
Next, we'll go to April in Madison. Hi, April.
Hi. I wanted to ask the author how he would have handled a situation that I've always wondered if I handled properly. I'm white. I was a school librarian in a school where the population was half white children from a very liberal academic neighborhood, and the other kids were bused in from an African-American, Hispanic, and Hmong neighborhood. And they were little. They were like third graders, and we were in the library, and I had a class, and somehow words came up. And one little white boy asked me with great sincerity, but what is the N-word? What is it? And I could see that some of those white children really had no idea what it was, but the black children were there, and I was very uncomfortable, and I refused to say it. I just said, well, it's a word that is very insulting, and we just don't use. And he kept saying, but what is it? And I never told him. And I've always wondered how I should have handled that.
Well, I'm not sure if there was a better way to handle it, but I would probably expand the context a little bit and say it's one of those words used to insult and demean another group of people. There are many such words, and none of them are appropriate among civil human beings. I mean, I would explain it in the context of any other vulgarity. You know, this is a forbidden word. This is a word that is not acceptable. The house I grew up in, we were not allowed to use that word, but it wasn't singled out as a word we couldn't use. It was a list of words that we couldn't use, and all of them we considered swear words.
Yeah. Okay, well, that makes me feel better.
Thank you very much, April, for the call. Interesting dilemma. What do you think, Jabari Yassin, about the use of the N-word in Mark Twain's Huck Finn?
Well, you know, that it occurs in Huck Finn about 215 times. And because of that, the book has become a source of great controversy. African-American parents have often challenged its inclusion on the curriculum at various schools. Now, in my opinion, I don't think that Mark Twain was racist, and I don't think that his use of it is racist. I think that he uses the word very effectively to satirize racism and expose the pitfalls in a country that at that time depended very much on a racist philosophy. What I would suggest to counteract the unease that some parents may have about such a text is I would postpone it. I wouldn't introduce it as a middle school text. I would introduce it as a high school text when students are more mature and able to grapple with these issues. And also, I would always teach it in conjunction with an African-American work of fiction that was written at the same time. And I provide examples in the book to sort of show how African-Americans who agreed with Twain, who condemned the racist system that was in place at the time, how they went about it, what kind of language they used.
We go now to Bob in Eau Claire. Hello, Bob.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is how that N-word has now been taken over by all sorts of people, and they now use the F-word for gay people, and quite readily. I hear it all the time, so now Fs are the new Ns. It's just, you know, same old, only now they just find somebody else to pick on, and even black people like to use that word. I even hear it off TV stars and such. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Any parallels there with the F word in Jabari Yassin?
Yeah, I think so. I think that I think he's right in that African Americans and other groups of people, that's one of the great ironies, that groups that are often condemned themselves respond by using the language of condemnation against others. Ralph Ellison talked about this. It helps the rest of us feel that we are somehow more safely American if we can point to another group and reduce them to an insult. But I think the caller also identifies what I consider a general decrease in civility in the country at large, the sort of rising rudeness in general. And it's something that we as adults have a responsibility to speak to and discourage in the younger generations.
We're talking with Jabari Yassin. He is author of the recently published book, The N-Word: Who Can Say It, Who Shouldn't, and Why. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison. 263-1890. Our next caller is Bill in Milwaukee. Hi, Bill.
Well, good morning. I'm wondering about the power of words. I believe words have power. I'm partly a traditionalist, so I like the idea that gay should be happy and joyful, but I also respect that the homosexual community uses it pretty happily and freely, and many of us do. We talk about gay marriage and gay everything. I'm wondering about how that power works in the definition and redefinition of words. I'm opposed to using any kind of language that puts people down. At the same time, I wonder about, say, for example, in this case, the black community, black folk, African-American people, having some right to reclaim a word or redefine a word so that it changes the power and use of the word really for everybody.
Jabari Yassin?
I think that, well, first of all, you can change the power of word. I mean, it was James Baldwin who said, you bring your experience to the language and you change it. And I think that does happen with American English, and that's one reason why it is so vital and continues to flourish. At the same time, I'm highly suspicious that this can be done with the N-word. For example, the word gay was not always a pejorative. It has other meanings. It has other definitions in history. But the N-word has no other connotation. It always occurs historically in a racist connotation that demeans and denounces African Americans. Because of that tenacious past, I'm highly suspicious that it cannot be converted or sanitized, as it were.
Bill?
Yeah. I think that's a helpful distinction to make.
Yeah, thanks very much for your call. We go now to Deacon in Plymouth. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Very well.
Just wanted to mention, we had an incident up here in one of our council meetings just in the last couple of weeks, which caused us to understand that even the replacement words for the N-word are just as dangerous. One of the aldermen was stated on that went out on live cable TV in the community channel. One of the replacement words, which would be colored person, he used that in a phrase, a demeaning phrase, and the community is in an uproar demanding an apology, and there's just all kinds of stuff hitting the fan now because this phrase was used in this council meeting and it went out live to the community. I just thought it was interesting that even one of the replacement words for the N-word is just as dangerous and damaging when put in a certain context.
Well, I don't know. Would you consider that a replacement word, Jabari Yassin?
No, I don't follow how colored person becomes a replacement for the N-word.
Yeah, we're losing you, Deacon, on your cell phone. It's saying colored person is just as dangerous is his main point.
I think the reaction to colored person would probably be simply that it's outdated, but not that it is historically a pejorative. I mean, the NAACP, the CP stands for colored people. So, I mean, the historical context there is often honorable as opposed to dishonorable. And I think that likely a reaction probably was to the fact that the speaker did not use African-American or a more contemporary term.
Yeah. What is your reaction to the city of New York and other local governments that want to ban or place a moratorium on the use of the word?
Well, I think the smart thing that they did in New York and are doing in other places is calling it a symbolic moratorium that is meant to discourage the careless use of the word. I think they are absolutely on point there in acknowledging that we cannot legislate a change in this behavior. And also, we want to be really careful when we're talking about legislating speech anyway. I'm not an advocate of hate speech as a concept that should be punished or banned. I think that speech, no matter how painful or hateful, deserves to remain free. I think that's one of the bedrock principles of the country. But I think we have responsibilities as citizens not to abuse that principle. And I think the symbolic moratorium does make that distinction clear.
Chris Rock was on Larry King. I think it was just this week. I saw it a couple of days ago. And Larry King brought up the topic of what do you make over all of this rage over the N-word and New York banning its usage. And I guess I'm trying to... One of the things that Chris Rock said was... Well, he was asked, are you affected when you hear this? And Chris Rock said, not when I hear it from you. And Larry King said, I've never said it. And Chris Rock says, I know. I'm just saying that when the wrong person says it, I'm affected. You know, when Ice Cube says it, I'm like, okay, yes. Toby Keith says it, and I say, I'll go kill Toby.
Well, I think we have to take, we have to assume that with Chris Rock, a portion of the comments are always delivered tongue-in-cheek. But I think the problem that he identifies there is who among us can determine who is the right person who is using this word and who is the wrong person who is using this word. I mean, context is everything. If Michael Richards had, in the course of performing his act, imitated a character who used the N-word, it would have been perceived a different way. Instead, it was perceived as, okay, he's dropping his act, and he's being Michael Richards, and he's responding to hecklers, and that's where he got into trouble. So it's the context is really important, I think.
Yeah. How are you affected when you hear the word?
You know, it gives me this vague, almost indescribable sense of unease or discomfort. I'm not enraged. It's more like a quick flinch, you know? And that was part of the underlying question of my research. That's why I went back as far as I could. I wanted to know, I mean, I'm kind of conditioned to flinch when I hear the word, and I understood that, but I wanted the specifics behind it. And now that I'm aware of the specifics, my reaction is still pretty much the same. I'm not inclined to use the word, and I'm not comfortable hearing it in the public square.
DJ in Fond du Lac, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I was bringing up a comment about... my parents had a dictionary that's from like the 1940s, 50s, whatever, Webster's dictionary, that described the word as being an ignorant person or an indentured servant. It didn't say anything about color. And if you want to preach to people about not using the N-word, shouldn't you, or basically to the whites about not using it, also blacks, shouldn't you also be preaching to the black community to say not to use the word honky, whitey, cracker, and other phrases such as that? I mean, to me, I don't get insulted by those, you know, words to myself, but things that do get me is, like, when I did have long hair, I was considered a hippie. When I, now I'm going bald and I've shaved my head because I'd rather not do a comb over, now I'm called a Nazi. And to me, the most insulting thing is if you are an American, you should consider yourself an American, not an Irish American, not an African American or anything else. You should be an American first. If you want to describe yourself other than anything other than an American, if you are black, that you have ancestry from Africa, you should say that I'm an American with African descent, or I'm an American with Irish descent.
I don't know, DJ, we're getting a little far afield here. You don't have any, you think the N-word is a perfectly fine word to use? Is that your main point, or what?
Well, I don't think it's any more of a problem than honky, whitey, cracker, Nazi, anything else like that.
Yeah, well, what about those words being used perhaps by the black community against whites, Jabari Yassin?
I agree with him. I don't think those words are appropriate. I think hateful language out of any citizen's mouth is inappropriate. So I would not advocate any group using pejoratives against another group. In terms of the dictionary definition of the N-word, that has certainly changed over time. But if you trace it back, just go to the Oxford English Dictionary, for example, you will find definitions that go beyond the definition that you cited. And if you go more recently, as recently as the 1990s, and you look in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, for example, it says an ignorant person usually taken to be a Negro or a black person. So it really depends on the dictionary.
Thanks, DJ, for the call. We will take your call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, as we talk about the N-word. Our guest is Jabari Yassim. He wrote the recently published book, The N-Word, Who Can Say It, Who Shouldn't, and Why. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. The UN climate report will be released on Friday and is expected to lay out dire consequences if global warming continues. Kathleen will talk with a climate change expert after 9 about the causes and effects of rising temperatures. We're talking with Jabari Yassim, author of The N-Word, a book about the cultural history of the N-word, its origin, its growth, its evolution, its current state of usage. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our next caller is Jerry in Genesee Depot. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is a Kraut from Genesee Depot. I wondered one time way back if the first people that came from Africa or maybe were from Nigeria, and it just became sort of an takeoff on that particular word, as slang sometimes does. But we use other words in this country to denigrate. Well, I don't say that Kraut is a denigrating thing, but it doesn't put you above people much. But they have WAP and SPIC and KIKE and all that kind of stuff. Some of it is said in joking, but we don't seem to get quite as upset about it as we do about this particular word. Yeah. And it kind of made me wonder a little bit whether everybody is getting a little too upset over it.
Yeah. Maybe what's the difference between the N-word and those other labels, Jabari Yassim?
Well, I propose that the N-word is a better barometer of the relationship between African Americans and whites in terms of the history of the country. Now, that is not to diminish the offensiveness or the significance of other epithets. They're just beyond my range of interest and beyond my range of expertise. But the caller's suppositions about the Africans coming from Nigeria, there was no country called Nigeria in 1619. West Africa was commonly referred to as the Gold Coast, and Nigeria was actually broken up into tribal territories such as Igbo land and Yoruba land at that particular time. So it's not likely that it was a mutation of the word Nigerians.
Yeah. In the book, with the who should say it or who shouldn't and why, we talked already earlier in the program that journalists certainly can use it in journalism. Scholars should be able to use it. You said in artists and musicians who understand the full meaning of the word or are using it with awareness should use it. But really no one else should be using it in public. And I wondered if that meant that privately it was okay to do it.
Well, privately, I'm not comfortable saying whether it's okay or not. My interest sort of follows you to your front door and remains on the step. I liken it to smoking. You know, I think if you choose to smoke in your own home and you're a fully informed adult, that's sort of your business. But when you sit next to me on a crowded train and you smoke, then it gets in my lungs. And so I'm particularly interested in the interaction between Americans and how the N-word affects that.
Yeah, you do talk about how politicians like Lyndon Johnson, who was there when the civil rights legislation passed, used this word in private.
Right, and ultimately. ultimately, to me, the fact that he uses this word often is, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting to me as a journalist and as a person who studies the past. But what is more interesting to me and more significant to me as an African-American is that, you know, he not only was present when this progressive legislation was passed, but that it could not have been passed without his leadership. So I think sometimes there is a disconnect between the language that people use in private and their actions in public, and we have to acknowledge that.
Bethany in Milwaukee is with us now. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm actually calling in regards to the previous two callers. I'm on my way to work right now, and I work at America's Black Holocaust Museum.
Mm.
So when people say that their other derogatory terms are extremely painful, I will not deny that. But the thing to understand about the N-word is it's not taken out of context. It's not blown out of proportion when you associate and understand the history that comes behind it. At our museum, we deal with lynching. We deal with mass murder that happened and has been associated directly with the N-word. The N-word has been used with forced sterilization. The N-word has been used with murder of a group of people. The N-word has been used with enslavement. So to draw a comparison between the N-word and other derogatory terms toward ethnic groups, I can understand if that ethnic group has been oppressed throughout the ages, but if they haven't, then there's no just comparison there. And that's my point. I'll take comments off the air.
I'm glad you called, Jabari Asim.
I've written about the Black Holocaust Museum. I think it's a terrific institution, so I appreciate her calling in. I'm hesitant to get into my genocide was more tragic mm-hmm. than your genocide type of comparisons. I don't think that they are particularly of significance here, but I do agree with the caller. One of my premises of the book is that the history of the word has tenaciously clung to the word so much that it cannot exist apart from history.
Yeah. Bethany, thanks again. Andy in Rice Lake, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Glad to join you. I was curious about your guest. You mentioned hip-hop music and rap that you thought was okay in certain circumstances for them to use the N-word. Would there be any other appropriate uses in your view other than folks who use the word in denouncing it?
I'm not sure I entirely understand the question.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little nervous. I'm not sure.
No, that's all right. Andy, we talked about how our guest thought that musicians and other artists could use the word.
Right, and I'm thinking about hip-hop in specific, or, you know, in rap. That, do you know examples? I could see for sure if somebody is saying the word because they're portraying a character or whatnot, using the word in order to point out how it's a bad thing.
Jabari Asim, an example of sorts of how using the N-word in rap music, for example, makes it okay?
Well, I think that anyone who uses the word as sort of an emblem of history or racism or powerlessness, I mean, there are many artists who have used it in that context. One of the best that I write about in the book is a rap artist named Mos Def, who has at least one song where he addresses the word very specifically and its manifestations in the society. I guess a really simplistic way of saying it is that he is not celebrating the word as some sort of dysfunctional behavior that should be regarded as heroic. He is actually using the word as it exists in a historical context. So the rap that I tend to frown on as a listener in the use of the word is it when they substitute it as a replacement for something heroic or virtuous, that this is something to be aspired to.
Yeah. Does that answer your question, Andy?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. We did a program on this issue after the Michael Richards rant. And we had a caller to that program that was saying, you know, if you put an A at the end of the word or A-Z at the end of the word, then it is, it's different. You're changing the word, and it is more of a greeting or a term of endearment. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. Using an A instead of an ER was actually the preferred spelling of racist in the United States just prior to the Civil War and after the Civil War, the two periods when blackface performance and minstrelsy really flourished in the country. The written spelling of the word was often with an A as opposed to an ER during this period, and it was some of the most racist material that has been produced in this country. And so it's not really a new thing. It's just a variation of this, of the same old word that was coined in the same racist context. And that's where you also see this other contradiction where some young people pose it as this race-neutral term that means something innocuous, but in many of their lyrics, they're actually using it in the same context in which it's always occurred, just spelling it with an A. Even Chris Rock in his monologues where he denounces this kind of stereotypical black behavior, he pronounces it with an A and not an ER. It's hard for me to make the distinction between the type of stereotypical behavior he condemns and these other people who say it's actually a race-neutral term that can mean, you know, that, mm-hmm. that I love you, that you're my friend.
Thanks to Andy in Rice Lake. Now Peg in Rice Lake. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello there. We're dominating the conversation.
Yeah, you bet.
I believe that the word, the N-word, can be sanitized. And I hope I'm not fined or imprisoned for saying them, but no one has really told me what words we're talking about, and I assume they are nigger or Negro. And there, they are said. I think the word nigger is a corruption, a southern corruption of the word Negro. And the southern drawl is full of corruptions from y'all on. The word Negro, meanwhile, I view as the Spanish word or other languages too, I think, Negro, which means black. So now if they want us to say it in English, okay, that's good, that's reasonable. We're English over here. And there should be nothing attached. But I do agree with your caller, three or four callers back, the woman who said the N-word is too wound up in history, a horrible, shameful history on the part of the Blancos. That's us. And
Peg, thank you very much. Let's get a reaction from our guest, Jabari.
Well, let's carefully make a distinction and make clear that we are not in any context discussing Negro. That is not the the word at issue here today, which is an innocuous word, but decades out of date and probably not really applicable to our discussion. But as early as 1766, you have African Americans writing in print about the N-word, not Negro, the N-word, and denouncing it as vulgar and illiberal. By 1775, you have the British Redcoats fighting the Continental Army. One in every five soldiers was African American, and the British Redcoats had a ditty that I quote in its entirety in the book, in which they denounce the African American soldiers by using the N-word, not by using Negro, not by calling them Africans, not by calling them colored, but by using the N-word, which by then, by 1776, was clearly a pejorative.
Thanks, Peg. Lyle in Strum. Good morning.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Would you unpack for me very quickly African-American as to denotation and connotation? You follow?
I follow, but you know, I'd have to pass on the question because I don't think it's relevant to the mission of the book we are discussing, which is to unpack the connotation and the denotations of the N-word. I think that's a separate discussion.
And we will go to Lee in Durand now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, Lee.
Can I say that word on the air?
Well, we're trying to say the N-word, so why don't you just ask your question and use the N-word?
What I wanted to do is share with you that I taught in the inner city at 20th and Monarchy for about 30 years, had a colored or black engineer, got to be the best friends with him, And every time he introduced me to any of his friends, he'd tell them I was the best white,
N-word.
Or whatever your word is, he ever meant. So I sort of got a fond feeling for it.
Yeah. You want to react to that?
Well, I'm happy for you. Unfortunately, it's not a fond feeling that the majority of Americans feel for the word. I would suggest that your situation is somewhat not representative of the experience of most people who encounter the word.
Yeah. I think he's bringing up, though, an example to some extent that his African-American friend at this time was using it as a term of endearment for him, too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Carol in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted just to make the comment that I don't think white people really can have any business determining how African Americans use this word. The one clearly black voice that I heard this morning was not really given full attention. I mean, I think the horror of slavery in America, it takes the whole issue well beyond a word.
Yeah. Well, that was the Bethany from the Black Holocaust Museum,
right?
I mean? Sure. And, well, our guest is African American. What do you want to say about that white people really don't have any say in this debate, Jabari Yassim?
Well, I understand what the caller is saying, mm-hmm. and in fact, that's one of the comments that I sort of anticipated mm-hmm. When writing the book. I did want to answer that question because one of the things that whites often say is, well, why can't I use the word? African Americans use the word. And I did want to answer that question, and you know, I try to explain why whites should not use the word, but I go further by trying to explain why African Americans shouldn't use it either. And I hope that as an African American, I'm standing on solid ground in venturing my opinion there.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks very much. Did you have anything else, Carol?
No, but I think it makes a world of difference knowing that the guest is not white in what he's saying. That it makes me accept his opinions, with having more weight.
Yeah, I guess I didn't think to specifically point out that you're African American. What's your I don't know. We only have about a minute left. Jabari Yassim, do you see the N word? I don't know, completely going away.
I don't. I think that as long as racism exists in some manifestation, however subtle, the word will retain its volatility and will continue to be around to haunt us. It's not a prospect that cheers me, but I think that is the reality we face.
Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Jabari Yassim, author of The N-Word, Who Can Say It, Who Shouldn't, and Why. Jabari Yassim is also the editor of the Washington Post Book World. Deputy editor of the Washington Post Book World. And thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing this hour and to Leo Duran for on-air production. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, you can call the radio store 1-800-747-7444 or listen again on our website, wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.